Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on another chemical spill at a U.S. steel plant. An Indiana woman was found dead with an 8-foot-long python wrapped around her neck. Jill Sheridan reports on Medicare open enrollment. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Roman Bronson of Indiana Plan about an upcoming construction trades job seminar. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Wednesday evening, U.S. Steel's Northwest Indiana facility had its third chemical spill in as many months into Lake Michigan waterways. In a news release, U.S. Steel says its Midwest plant in Portage was slightly over its limit for hexavalent chromium. 2 years ago, it discharged 300 pounds of that same cancer-causing chemical into the Burns waterway. The company says parts of the facility were immediately shut down following the spill and will stay that way as it investigates the cause of the leak. U.S. Steel also notified local stakeholders and the Indiana Department of Environmental Management. This comes less than a week after IDEM released an investigative report on a spill from a Northwest Indiana steelmaker which killed about 3,000 fish. In that report, the agency said ArcelorMittal failed to notify authorities of problems at the plant which could put public health and the environment at risk.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
The mayor of Portage is calling for several changes to the way ArcelorMittal operates. Last week, the Indiana Department of Environmental Management released an investigative report of the company's August spill of cyanide and ammonia that killed about 3,000 fish in a Lake Michigan waterway. Among other things, it showed that ArcelorMittal failed to notify the public soon enough about the problems at the plant. Mayor John Cannon says ArcelorMittal should monitor for excess chemicals more frequently and send those test results to IDEM daily, place backups for its warning systems in the facility, and replace the fish lost in the Little Calumet River. Cannon also wants the Burns Harbor Sewer Treatment Plant to have a pretreatment coordinator to make sure the company is following the procedures. The Portage mayor has suggestions for item two, that the agency move its Northwest Regional Office from Valparaiso to Portage or set up stations at steel mills in the area.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
With an 8-foot-long python wrapped around her neck, had apparently kept snakes at the residence, which was filled with snakes and outfitted for a collection of the reptiles. Indiana State Police Sergeant Kim Riley said Laura Hurst was found unresponsive Wednesday night on the floor of a home in the northern Indiana town of Oxford with a snake wrapped loosely around her neck. The person who found the battleground woman removed the reticulated python from her neck, but medics were unable to revive her. An autopsy is scheduled. The home contained about 140 snakes, about 20 of which were owned by Hurst, who apparently kept them there and visited the Oxford home about twice weekly. The home's owner had renovated it to house a collection of snakes. The reptiles were caged or otherwise secured in the building. The Journal and Courier reported that property records show the house is owned by Benton County Sheriff Don Munson, who lives next door. He told the newspaper that he was the one who found Hurst. He called her death a, quote, tragic accident with loss of human life. Munson told the Journal and Courier for a story in 2001 when he was a county sheriff's deputy that he bred snakes for sale.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
A 50-year-old Virginia woman has been charged under Indiana's new revenge porn law in a three-person relationship dispute involving Chicago Fox 32 news anchor Rafael Weigel and a Valparaiso woman. Kathy Brown faces a misdemeanor count of distribution of an intimate image based on allegations she obtained explicit photographs which a Valparaiso woman had sent to Weigel. Porter County Record states Brown is charged with sending the images to the local woman along with threats of providing the photos to her children's school. Police said Brown was dating Weigel, as was the Valparaiso woman. The local woman said she was contacted in August by Weigel, who said Brown had accessed his phone and downloaded the explicit photographs. The Valparaiso woman said she began receiving emails from Brown a few days later that included explicit photos. Brown also was accused of threatening in the emails to send the photos to the schools attended by the local woman's children and to notify the local woman's husband. The local woman is seeking an order of protection. In arguing for the protective order against Weigel, the Valparaiso woman accused the newsman of, quote, attempting to use his powerful, affluent position in Chicago to repeatedly harass me and has committed revenge porn by sending pictures to people. She goes on to say she believes Weigel gave the explicit photos to Brown.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The Indiana Family and Social Services Administration has temporarily suspended work requirements for people on the Healthy Indiana Plan. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jill Sheridan reports the move is in response to a federal lawsuit filed last month.
The lawsuit challenging HIP, Indiana's Medicaid expansion plan, threatens more than the requirement to report work or volunteer hours. The suit also challenges lockout penalties and premium payments included in the program. FSSA says they're suspending the requirements and will wait and see what happens with this suit and similar challenges in other states. The work requirements started this year. In January 2020, some Hoosiers on HIP could have had their benefits suspended if they didn't report hours. FSSA says members are still encouraged to log hours and receive work training and education assistance. An estimated 70,000 Hoosiers were expected to comply with the requirements. More than 400,000 people have health coverage through HIP. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jill Sheridan.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
People from all over Indiana attended the annual Drug Abuse Symposium in Indianapolis to hear about the latest in work to improve addiction response efforts. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jill Sheridan reports this is the 10th year for the event.
The criminal justice system is the primary referral source for addiction treatment. This is a problem, says Indiana Chief Justice Loretta Rush, who kicked off the drug abuse event with a keynote speech.
I think we're late to the game, really, dealing with a model for the court system on addictions.
This lack of structure has affected every part of the legal system, including child welfare and eviction cases. Rush serves on the National Judicial Opioid Task Force and has been working to create better systems to address substance abuse. She says legal professionals need to be trained on everything from trauma to medication-assisted treatment.
If you're going to be ordering services and treatment, you need to, as a judge, understand it.
Rush says there are resources and funds for counties to set up systems to address the addiction crisis. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jill Sheridan.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Enrollment for Medicare is open right now. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jill Sheridan reports the country's top Medicare official says some Hoosiers could be paying less.
During the annual open enrollment period, Hoosiers on Medicare can add benefits or change plans. Administrator of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Seema Verma, says in Indiana, some premiums are down an average of 15%.
So that's real money back in the pockets of Indiana's senior population. So we're very excited about that.
Verma says Medicare also offers a new tool called Plan Finder to help navigate plan choices. More than 1 million Hoosiers are on Medicare, federal health insurance plans for people over 65. Open enrollment ends December 7th. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jill Sheridan.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
A new report finds the number of children without health insurance in Indiana has increased. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jill Sheridan reports this is the second year the state has followed this national trend.
The percentage of uninsured children in Indiana went up from 5.9% in 2016 to 6.6% in 2018. Georgetown University's Center for Children and Families put out the report, and Executive Director Joan Ackler says Indiana is one of 13 states with increases this significant.
These findings should be a clear call for action among our political leaders if they care about children's health.
Reasons for the increase may include changes in the Affordable Care Act and delays in funding for children's health insurance programs. Director of Policy with Covering Kids and Families of Indiana, Mark Fairchild, says this can create communication challenges.
Because it sounds like it'd be quite an obstacle to overcome to get their kid covered.
Continuous coverage for children can improve long-term health outcomes. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jill Sheridan.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Five men, four of them convicted murderers, performed a play Monday night at the South Bend Civic Center. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jennifer Weingart reports the play weaves a work of fiction in with the stories of the men.
Heartless. It's the name of the play, but it's also an allegory for the way the men felt when they were incarcerated.
The story is about hope.
That's Antron Crockett. He tells his story in the play, and he also wrote the short story in the play as well.
It's about self-reflection and, you know, redemption, trying to overcome your adversities and doing something with them. The story and our stories, coming through what we have came through and being who we are today, runs parallel.
The short story Crockett wrote is about a baby born without a heart. Interwoven are the men's stories, like the story of Jamarcus Fields.
26 years in the belly of the beast with seemingly no hope. See, most of the friends I grew up with sold their souls to the devil. I managed to keep mine, but I ended up losing my heart. Which one is worse?
Fields was recently released from the South Bend Community Reentry Center. The other four men will be in the next few years. The center runs sort of like a halfway house. The men inside spend most of their days outside it, working and volunteering in the community. Charles Bowen is the warden at the reentry center. He says the partnership with the Civic is another way to prepare the men to come back into society and to prepare the community to take them.
All of these men, whether we like it or not, are going to be our neighbors. We can't stay mad at them. We have to realize that. We have to come to that realization. And everything that we're doing here is to prepare these men so that they can get a nice, solid release.
The center began working with the Civic as community service. A group of men come to the theater to help with sets and other work behind the scenes. Then a few of them auditioned and were cast in a production of A Few Good Men. John Applegate didn't start out wanting to be on stage.
I was just going to be working in the background, but as we went to rehearsals and I saw how the cast and the theater embraced us and didn't judge us, my anxiety level dissipated completely.
After A Few Good Men, Crockett took the pages of his short story and gave it to the director, Terry Farron.
Antron came up to me and just very nonchalantly said, "Hey, I have this short story I want you to read." I go home, I sit down and read it, bawling like a baby. And I just said, wow, I need to help them develop this.
Farron and Crockett brought the idea to the rest of the men. Elijah Sugg says they could see themselves in the heartless child.
We all could see the correlation between the child and ourselves in a way. Everybody has different experiences throughout life, but we all felt that we lived through some of the same experience, had the same type of emotions, the same thoughts, the same feelings, the same dealings with people and society in general.
Detron Lee also tells his story in Heartless. He says the performance as a whole is stronger than the stories on their own.
I can sit here and listen to each one speak about their own individual experience by, you know, going through prison or whatever. And I can even listen to the storyline itself of the play, and it won't touch me. But I mean, it will, but not in the fashion that it did when I'm actually there and I'm seeing how it affects everyone else.
Jennifer Boat was at the performance. She stayed for the talk back afterwards. She asked the men and the audience to remember that these crimes had victims. She says she thinks what they're doing is good, but that victims' voices should be represented.
I think that's wonderful. I would love for someone to speak to the person that raped me and said, "Hey man, this isn't cool. You can't do this to little girls. It ruins their lives. You can't do that." And maybe if someone like them had spoken to him, maybe I wouldn't be in the situation I am now.
Aaron Nichols, the executive director of the Civic, says they hope the play can be used to reach kids before they make the kind of choices that get them incarcerated.
We have to take this to our next generation. We have to have the kids, whether they're in juvenile justice or, you know, whether they're just part of the middle schools.
Director Terry Farron says for the men, it's about giving back to the community.
What's important is who they are today. They're ready to be part of the community. They're ready to give back to the community.
A next performance for Heartless has not been scheduled, but all the guys want to keep it going. They want to use it to reach out to the kids that are struggling, to help them choose a better path. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jennifer Weingart.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
In 1983, Indianapolis hosted one of the first summits on the emotional and psychological mistreatment of children. This week, experts and local, state, and international leaders are meeting to continue that work. Side Effects Public Media's Carter Barrett reports that they're looking for new ways to tackle the problem.
Over three decades ago, Dr. Stuart Hart was a professor at the Indiana University, Purdue University of Indianapolis. He gathered a group of psychologists together and asked them to name the most critical issue facing children.
To my surprise, they said emotional abuse and neglect of children, psychological maltreatment of children. That's the issue that deserves top priority because it is so destructive and it's so poorly understood.
Hart then organized one of the first international conferences dedicated to the issue. Since that conference, we know a lot more about the impact of harmful experiences. It can last into adulthood.
There really is little question about how destructive it is to terrorize your child.
A groundbreaking study in the 90s highlighted the impact of adverse childhood experiences. They're known by the acronym ACEs and include abuse, incarcerated parents, divorce, or drug use. The study by Kaiser Permanente and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention surveyed some 17,000 people. It found that ACEs increased the risk of heart disease, alcoholism, drug abuse, depression, and early death. But Hart, who is now semi-retired, said there are ways to overcome these issues.
Your ACEs is not your destiny. It's not your future. It only becomes that if you allow it to and if you emphasize its destructive power rather than the manner in which you can intervene, you can overcome, and you can add the positive element.
One group trying to create these interventions is The Villages, a nonprofit that helps place foster children in stable homes. Dr. Demetrius Hutchins is on the board of The Villages and was a foster kid herself and changed homes 14 times. She agrees that ACEs shouldn't feel like a death sentence for youth, and she's seen attitudes change over the years.
Adults weren't too aware of when I was growing up. It was suck it up. You need to worry about, having a roof over your head versus, you know, how you're feeling right now.
And the local education consultant wants more children to overcome the odds.
My ability to overcome my circumstances and my background should not be unique. And the way that we make it not unique is, for instance, having summits like this.
The Village's CEO, Sharon Pierce, says this week's summit brings together people in many different fields. They'll tackle the issue from all sides, including those at the center, parents and their children.
What can we do to create neighborhoods that are caring communities? Who are the indigenous leaders that need to be partners to this? Again, not just the professionals, but who do we need to be holding hands with?
The summit includes representatives from the state departments that oversee education, child services, and mental health and addiction. Julie Whitman is the executive director for the Indiana Commission on Improving the Status of Children. She helped organize the summit and says it's focused on solutions.
They don't want it to just be an ivory tower conversation. You know, we need something to come out of it that's going to be practical, that can actually help real children.
Whitman says when the three-day summit concludes Tuesday, participants will leave with a game plan. For Side Effects Public Media, I'm Carter Barrett.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Roman Bronson.
Coming up next week, November 6th, actually, Wednesday, at the Art House, a social kitchen in downtown Gary, will be another opportunity to find out more about getting a career with good pay and benefits, becoming a member of one of 20 different union construction trades here in Northwest Indiana. It's a project that oftentimes put on by the Indiana Plan, and with us, the Northwest Indiana representative for Indiana Plan, Roman Bronson, is with us today. Roman, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, for folks that are not familiar with what the Indiana Plan is all about, tell us a little bit about it and how it blends in with, I guess, another in the series of construction seminars that's going to be happening here in Northwest Indiana.
The Indiana Plan is a statewide organization whose mission is to increase minority participation within the trade. We're looking for all underrepresented populations, whether African-American, Hispanic, women, veterans, or the underemployed. So to that purpose, we're been putting on these regional seminars to let people know about apprenticeships and how that's the best and primary way to get involved with a union construction trade.
That is something that probably people immediately think about within union jobs of all sorts, I suppose, in particular with the construction trades, is the apprenticeship program. Tell us how things have evolved over the years in the apprenticeship area and how it comes to kind of blends in with what we face today in the 21st century.
I tell everybody that productivity is the main metric for profitability, and that's the same thing with construction. There has been more technology infused within the apprenticeship process to make people more productive and safe on these job sites. So an apprenticeship in general is a combination of on-the-job training, where you're going to work and making money, and then classroom training. And part of that classroom training is going to be the cutting edge of what's needed in the industry. It's always evolving. We have partnerships with these large industrial companies in our area, as well as the smaller commercial stuff, and they directly influence what that training looks like. So it's always evolving as the workforce needs are changing.
Now, when you have the union construction seminars, it's like the one coming up here on November 6th in Gary, you have representatives from the different trades unions coming in to talk about their particular craft and about the apprenticeship programs that pertain to them?
So for the most part, we do a lot of talk with the Indiana Plan. We have these partnerships with all these union building trades, so we're able to give them a very brief overview of each trade. Mm-hmm. Some business agents do attend these, and they answer the questions as needed. But primarily, it'll be myself. It'll be the Dillon Law Firm to help people that usually have some legal barriers with getting involved with apprenticeship, as well as the Gary Human Relations Commission, just in case they feel like they need some help with navigating any issues with if they feel like they've been discriminated against as far as applying.
We probably should have asked this question a little sooner in the conversation, but for people that are not familiar with what particular construction trades in Northwest Indiana are all about, go down the list and tell us about the unions that are represented, the types of work that they do, and in particular, looking to the future for jobs. These, of course, everybody that's opportunities that can learn about at the seminars coming up here, how they can become apprentices and get into the careers.
There's a lot of different trades that's represented in Northwest Indiana.
Yeah.
There's 20 of them in particular. I mean, the ones that people know about typically are the carpenters that build the structures, the electricians that wire them up, the plumbers that make sure that all the fixtures are working correctly. But there's also ones like the technical engineers that people aren't as aware of that help with the layout of the site, teamsters that help bring all the materials to the site. And there's just so much information there that we often tell people to go to there's a website called We Build NWI.
Right.
It's been created by the Construction Advancement Foundation, and it's a great place that all this information is congregated, and you can go through there at your leisure and pick out some of the things that makes that you may find most appealing. I believe we were talking about apprenticeships into the construction trade.
Yeah.
Once you're an apprentice, they'll provide you with all that training and the job opportunities to then become part of a union construction trade. Usually there's a small waiting period there between getting involved in an apprenticeship and actually being accepted into the union. So all of that stuff, there's a pathway and it's all spelled out. And that's why we're doing these seminars, to try to make sure everyone is aware of these opportunities.
Now, how was the participation and the attendance in the last of the series of union construction seminars that was held here locally?
The last time we put this on, we put it on at the Urban League building of Northwest Indiana. right there in Gary on 3101 Broadway. And we had I was heartened by the amount of participation that we had. Obviously, you want more. We had around 30 people to show up, and that was completely word of mouth with some, help with our partners. And we're hoping for a larger turnout. Already we have interest in the 40 to 50 people range. It's limited seating, so we're hoping that whoever is interested can RSVP so we can provide all the paperwork as well as refreshments.
Well, that's what I was going to ask next. If anybody's interested in attending the next seminar, which is coming up on November 6th, it's going to happen there at the Art House, the Social Kitchen in downtown Gary. How can they, first off, find out more and be able to sign up to be able to participate?
We're making it easy for people. That's the same number. So It's 219-884-4503. That's the Indiana Plan office. We're handling all the registration. So if you are interested, just give us a call and we'll put you down, as well as answer any questions that you may have. As well as you can reach us through email at Gary@IndianaPlan.org. That's Gary@IndianaPlan.org.
Roman, thank you very much for being with us today to talk about this, and we hope that you get another good attendance at the next Union Construction Seminar coming up.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
It's Roman Bronson. He is the Northwest Indiana representative for the Indiana Plan. He's talking about the free Union Construction Seminar that is coming up on Wednesday, November 6th. It'll be held starting at 10 o'clock in the morning at Art House, a Social Kitchen, which is on 5th Avenue in downtown Gary.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by BenSound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.